Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, hosting this week. With me, as always, is Stuart Smith. Hello, Stu. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, Don. Happy season's greetings to you and yours.
Yes. Happy holidays to you too, Stu. Yes, no rest for the wicked, though. We're back at it like a bad habit. This week, we're going to take a look at our J2 season review for 2020. What a year it's been. Such a sort of crazy year, Stu, that we decided we couldn't review it by ourselves. We needed a little bit of help. We picked up the bat phone and we got in touch with Mike Innes, who's joining us as a special guest to run the rule over J2 2020. So, hi, Mike. How are you?
Hi, John. Hi, Stuart. I'm pretty good and I'm absolutely delighted to be able to make a contribution to the pod. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, we mentioned in the green room before we pressed record, Mike, that Stuart and I sort of battled on knowing that we needed help for a good few months there in the trenches towards the end of the season. So we finally reached out and you were good enough to give us a helping hand. So we really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks so much. For anyone who might not know you, Mike, you're on Twitter. You're at Gogo Omia Ardija. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I've had that Twitter account for more years than I would care to mention, probably, have been taking a disdainful attitude towards matters at NAC5 for a good number of years. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, disdain is certainly a watchword on this pod on an almost weekly basis, as you know. So that'll fit right in, I think. Okay, we'll get down to it then, because there's lots to cover as usual. For the listeners, the way we decided to do this was, before recording, the three of us have all given a school report or school kind of grade, A, B, C, D, or E, for each of the 22 J2 teams. So hopefully, proving that we do know our stuff, we ended up with 11 teams, all three of us giving the same grade, A, B, C or D, but there are 9 teams in the division where we differed. So we're going to go through the table from top to bottom. We're going to touch on each team briefly, but for the teams where we all had the same grade, we'll keep it short and sweet. I think it's probably more mileage, more entertainment maybe from us talking about the sides where we had different grades. That sounded simple when I was thinking it. It might not have sounded so simple when I said it out loud, but hopefully you'll get the hang of it as we go. So the top two then, as we've discussed many times, Tokushima and Fukuoka promoted to J1 last week or last midweek or 2.5 midweeks ago, but recently. We were pretty much, pretty similar on this. We all gave them an A grade, Tokushima AAA and Fukuoka AAA. So well done to them. Nagasaki finished third. Obviously, they were agonizingly close. Now, Stu, you and I both decided Nagasaki were worthy of an A grade, but Mike was, some of his disdain from Omiya dripped over here, and he awarded Nagasaki a B. So, Stu, first of all, can you talk a little bit about your A, so that I'm not throwing Mike under the bus straight away? And then why do you think Nagasaki are in the A category? And then we'll throw him under the bus in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I gave them A because they did a lot better than I thought they would. I didn't have them pegged as promotion, automatic promotion candidates. Of course, when this season started, we still had the vision of the playoffs, and I thought they'd do well to get into the top six. I didn't think Teguro Mori was particularly adept at putting an attacking side together, but they surprised me, and they surprised me in a good way, and they looked the part, and they took it up until the penultimate round of games before they drew at home to Corfu, which ultimately ended their promotion hopes. But the reason I gave them an A was because they exceeded my expectations, and I think that if you'd have asked me before the season, do I think Nagasaki will finish third, then I would have said absolutely not. But they got off to a really good start, and they kind of faded away in the middle, but after they signed Edgar Jr. from Yokohama F. Marinos, they really gave Fukuoka and Tokushima a good race, and that's why I gave them an A, because they exceeded my expectations for them.
Fair enough. I think before we give Mike right of reply, I should have said at the top we did this grading, but we didn't discuss beforehand, you know, the criteria or anything like that. I think that was probably a good thing, because we didn't end up duplicating. If we all were working with the same criteria, we would have ended up with pretty much the same grade. So it's very personal, very subjective. But yeah, it covers things like league position, obviously, but also our kind of preseason expectations as well, and the resources that each team had available. So Mike, B for Nagasaki. Why did you go for B and not A for them?
Yeah, I think your point about sort of selection criteria is a really good one there, John. And when I was listening to Stuart describing his reasons for awarding them A, I was, you know, kind of like nodding along in agreement. And but I think that the reason that I gave Nagasaki a B was clearly I was looking at it through a different lens, and if the Nagasaki supporters listening to this conversation will forgive me, in a three horse race, which is what the promotion race eventually turned out to be, they finished third, and effectively they kind of missed out on what it was that they were trying to do. They did have a really good start. They were pretty consistent throughout the season. Kaio Cesar has turned out to be one of my favourite players of the year. But ultimately, Nagasaki have, dare I say it, failed to do what it was that they were trying to do. So therefore, to award them the same kind of grade that that we've given to Tokushima and Fukuoka, that doesn't really seem to be right. And I think that with hindsight, things probably went wrong right in the middle of the season, where in consecutive games they lost against Fukuoka, and that meant that Fukuoka, who were improving at the time, pulled level on points with them, and then in the next game they lost against Tokushima, both at home, and that enabled Tokushima to move 7 points clear of the table. And I think that ultimately that those results proved decisive, so it's a B for me.
I think that 1-2 punch, you know, losing those two consecutive games is really, really important to bring up, because I think you're right that was a turning point. Yeah, I think for me it's interesting, because I'm sure if we asked Nagasaki fans, or even asked the players, I think they would probably agree more with the B than the A that Stu and I have gave. And I think the point that you bring up is really valid, Mike, about, you know, goal achievement. You know, obviously with being, you know, so close to automatic promotion down to the wire, that would have been the goal, would have been to achieve that. So I don't think, I'm sure there weren't many high fives and fist bumps after finishing third. So I think A or B, you can sort of spin it both ways, I think. But I take your point. And I think this is something we'll come on to later when we get down to the bottom half of the table, about achievement of goals as being one of the criteria, not just whether we personally enjoyed watching the teams or not, for example. And on Tokushima and Fukuoka, we didn't mention them too much, really, because we're in agreement that they get A. And Stu and I have talked about Tokushima and Fukuoka pretty much ad nauseum. For 30 weeks, Stu, 28 weeks. I'm sure the listeners can go back to the classic episode if they want to hear more on that. In fourth place, Kofu ended up finishing fourth. Again, we were all in agreement, and they finished with a B grade from the J-Talk extra time panel. So B's all round for Kofu. And again, I think we've discussed them at length in previous pods. Just too inconsistent, really, and too many draws to kind of make any inroads into that three-way promotion race. Kofu finishing, let's see, I'm going to do maths again now, 19 points off the automatic promotion places. So again, I don't think we could go higher than a B for them. Kita Kyushu finished fifth, fantastic season for them. And I could talk about Akira Disaro all day, so we won't do that. But again, we were all in agreement. We all decided that Kita Kyushu had done fantastically well their first season back in the second tier. We gave them A grades across the board. Now, Iwata ended up finishing sixth, which is a bit better than it looked like they were going to do for a while. I decided that that meant they should get a C grade. So I gave Iwata a C. Mike, you joined me on that and gave Iwata a C. Stu, you were a bit more strict, a bit harsh with an E. So yeah, Mike, you go first this time and tell us why you gave Iwata a C.
Yeah, sure. So I think that probably in a kind of like a regular season, Iwata, a club like Iwata in J2, they are aiming to get into the playoffs or to be automatically promoted. I think that has to be a target. And so they've done that. So fair enough. Let's give them a C. That's their, they've achieved that basic aim. I mean, a bit like with Corfu, I'm in shock that they managed to finish so high. I note that Iwata got 15 points from the last 7 games, which is promotion form in anybody's book, and that will have boosted them. My notes also include the word disdainful. It seems to be the word of the day. I'd kind of forgotten about that. But I've written down disdainful of underachieving larger clubs, and Iwata J2 are certainly one of those.
Yeah, it was. Oh, go on, Mike. Sorry.
And the other part of that is the 6-0 win over Kanazawa makes me like them less.
Yeah, well, it was a good 2020 was a bumper year for underperforming big clubs in J2. So we
may return. Yes.
Yeah. Let's leave that hanging. I'm inclined to agree. My beef with Iwata was that they were very schizophrenic's probably the wrong word to use, but sometimes with you know, Lukian is a very sort of graceful and elegant striker, you know, a bit like a sort of like a swan. Seeing him play was often quite quite fun, and Lulinha as well, is it in that mold. Defensively, they were a bit of a shambles for a lot of the season. The two goals that they gave away against Machida, and I know it was a kind of nothing game at the end of the season, but really I haven't laughed that hard for a long time at a football match at highlights, and I laughed a lot at that one. And Koki Ogawa just had a really rough season. He didn't fit into the tactics or the system really that the Fernando Hubero wanted to play. He got COVID-19 as well. That's not his fault, obviously, but that didn't help. Didn't help the team. Didn't help things. So yeah, I think they had a strong. For me, they had a strong end to the season, which I think brought for me. Probably brought them up from D to C in overall rankings. But Stu, what say you, Stu?
Well, I think that for Jubilar, they were incredibly, incredibly disappointing. I think that for the amount of talent that they had, especially going forward, especially in that forward line, they had Lulinha, Lukian. They had Ogawa, they had Seiya Nakano, I'm sure Kotaro Omori, Hiroki Yamada. They had Musayev at the base of their midfield as well. They had everything that they needed to really mount a strong promotion push. But from Fernando Hubero and then the appointment of Masakazu Suzuki that I still can't get over, I think that club has just gone, they've gone rogue. Whatever happened at that club or whatever happened internally within the coaching structures or within the boardroom at that club has rendered them, it rendered them impotent this year in J2. And I think that, the sixth place finish kind of disguises a lot of the bad stuff that happened earlier on. And I think that Jubilo should have done much better. I know they brought in J2 midfielder of the year, Yasuhito Endo, to play for them. But that's another thing. I genuinely don't understand why that occurred. I thought he would go there as a coach. And I think I said as much on the pod when it was announced that he was going there. There was no reason for that. And I think it's just... Jubilo in 2020 were just a a hodgepodge of ideas that no ideas particularly gelled, and there was no uniformity from top down, and there was no uniformity in the coaching, and they looked like a collection of individuals on the pitch. And yeah, they might have finished sixth, but their performances throughout the season barely kind of scratched the surface of what they should have been able to do had they had somebody competent in charge. And yeah, I was annoyed at them, and I don't like Jubilo in 2020. That's why I gave them an E.
I think that's fair. What annoyed me a lot was seeing them often playing with like a back three or like three centre backs, none of whom were particularly quick or seemed very comfortable playing in a back three. Whereas if you contrast that with Kofu, who also played with a back three, but they were very well organised and they knew each other's kind of roles. My point is, I'm not against the back three in principle, but Iwata just used it again and again, even when it kind of became obvious that the players and whatever goalkeeper they tried wasn't good with a back three, the personnel weren't good with a back three, they never really changed it that much. And that's often a source of frustration to me. I don't mind when teams try something, but when it doesn't work, it bothers me when they persist with it. So
I think we'll we might come on to Matsumoto later on in this, but I think that you're right in saying that Jubilo tried something and just kept trying it and it didn't work. So they fired Jubero and they brought in someone with older ideas than Jubero had. And again, I'm just like, and I know Suzuki's an old Jubilo player, but that just smacked of just not knowing what to do. Whereas Matsumoto Yamaga, and we will come on to them later on, Matsumoto Yamaga recognized the problem. They recognized they made a mistake with the coach that they hired. So they fired him, and they saw a huge upturn in form, and an upturn in form that makes me more positive about Matsumoto going forward than it does about Jubilo.
I think, again, this is all good stuff to keep people listening. Keep driving the car round and round the convenience store, not getting out. Yes. Okay, we'll move on then. Montedio Yamagata finished seventh. They were one of my favourite teams to watch, especially in the second half of the season, even when they lost Yu Yamagishi to Fukuoka. They didn't really break stride. In fact, it was the opposite. They seemed to get even better. So I decided they were worthy of a B grade for their efforts in 2020. Stu and Mike, you were both on board with that, and we all gave Yamagata a B. I think we're going to talk a lot more about Yamagata when it comes to our new season preview, because they made some interesting transfer moves in and out, and they have a very stylish new kit as well, which I think bodes well for a promotion push next season. So we'll talk about Yamagata more and Vinicius Araujo in due course, but a B's across the board for them for 2020. Let's talk about Kyoto, who finished eighth, because this was the team that had the biggest spread of grades from our hastily assembled panel. I gave Kyoto a C, which I feel a bit embarrassed about now, because Stu, you went for E and Mike D. So the through line is none of us were particularly impressed.
So why did you give them a C then?
No, it's not. I'm the host. It's not. Okay. C. I think if I'm honest, I'm swayed by how they finish the season with Utaka and Keya Sento. Because I think they, Utaka was a top scorer in the division, obviously, with 22 goals, and I think he masked a lot of the problems that they had. I think that's fair comment, but he did mask the problems, so I didn't feel comfortable going as low as E for a team that had the top scorer. I think most of the issues they had were at the back, where the back three, again, we talked about, or I mentioned back threes already, they often looked a bit exposed. I thought Tomoya Wakahara, the goalkeeper who played most often, I definitely think there's the potential there for a good goalkeeper, but especially towards the end of the season, he was too easily beaten. He made too many mistakes. So I think that kind of, if I took his poor form and lack of confidence out of the equation, I thought there was actually, they were a better team than the results suggested sometimes. Utaka scoring regularly at the other end meant that they stayed sort of top six-ish for a lot of the time, even though they were disappointing. So I think overall, very good going forward, okay in midfield, pretty ropey at the back. That's a standard J2 pattern for me. So I thought C was okay. But I think what I'm about to hear is gonna make me reassess. But Mike, you went one grade lower. You went for D. So why did you give Kyoto a D for 2020?
Well, just to pick up on one point that you've just made there, John, which was about them being good going forward. I don't think they are good going forward. I don't think they have been good going forward. They've clearly got the best goal scorer in the division, and he scored 22 out of their 47 goals.
Mm.
So the whole of the rest of the squad have contributed 25 league goals.
Mm.
Beautiful stadium. They've spent a lot of money. The team just hasn't been up to it. Outside of Peter Utaka, they've lost home and away to Ormia. They lost at home to Yamaguchi. They lost at home to Gunma. No, that's not a C.
Yeah, come on, John. Behave yourself.
That's me told. Pile on the misery.
Well, again, there's it's the expectation, right? So, I gave them an E because I thought there is no way that they should have been so far adrift of the promotion places, given the money that they were able to spend and given the standard of player that they were able to bring in. I think if I'm being honest, maybe E is a bit strict, is a bit kind of too harsh for them. Because I think that possibly the coronavirus kind of stadium restrictions really hampered Kyoto, possibly more than any other J2 team this year. They had that brand new stadium open. They would have filled it every single week. They would have had a raucous atmosphere because the supporters are so close to the pitch, but I think they were deprived that, and maybe that's something to take into account. But at the same time, the way they went through goalkeepers, so they went with Wakahara, and then they brought in Shimizu, who just last year conceded 13 goals in one game. It's just not the kind of move you should be making. The back three obviously didn't work. It's okay to have Yori Boyce, who's he's one of the best defenders in the division, but if you don't put good players either side of him, he can't do it all himself.
Mm.
Midfield, I love Yoshihiro Shoji, but he needs help in there as well. He's not a player that hunts players down. You give him the ball and he passes it. He's not the player who gets stuck in. Obviously, Utaka was the main threat, but like Mike just said, if you say to people who watch Kyoto, well, if you take Utaka out the side, where are the goals coming from? That's a really difficult question because they don't really come from anywhere else, to be perfectly honest. And I think that there were rumors linking him with Machida earlier in this offseason. And from what I understand, he was given a concrete offer by Machida, but it was turned down. And I wonder, in a kind of perverse way, I wonder if like an over-reliance on Utaka to cover the issues that they have might kind of be slightly counterproductive. I think Chokije coming in will be able to get the most out of Utaka again, but he'll also be able to get the most out of the collection of players that he A, inherits, and B, brings in. I'm interested today in that Kyoto brought in Kosuke Takatomi, who's very much a Chokije favourite, and I expect him to be influential in that side next year. They've also brought in Naoto Misawa from Gainare Tottori, who gives them an extra attacking option. Obviously, you mentioned Keiya Sento, and they're obviously going to have some good players coming up from their academy as well. So I think that there's potential for Kyoto to do well, but this year it was shambolic at times. And I think I know I'm talking for too long, but Mike laid out the defeat. I think the thing that annoys me the most is that they beat Tokushima at home, they beat Avispa Fukuoka at home, they beat Vanfori Corfu at home, they beat Kitakyushu at home. So it showed that they were able to do good things, but there was a lack of something, whether it's motivation, whether it's application, whether it's tactical knowledge, whether it's tactical knowledge that's being imparted onto them by the coach. There was something really badly missing from that side. And yeah, I expected a lot more from them. And that's why I went for an E for them.
Okay, well, never let it be said that we don't tolerate discussion and dissent on the pod. I think, having listened to the points you both make, I think we can all agree that Kyoto were disappointing. You know, nobody's arguing with that. And I think the level of disappointment really just depends on how much you enjoyed watching Peter Utaka just sort of bulldoze his way through various hapless defences. I will say that I used to feel sorry for a poor old Ryunosuke Noda, you know, the kind of reserve forward who is a willing, you know, he's a trier, but he needs five or six chances to get a goal. And I think considering the money that's been spent, the strength and depth wasn't there as well. It's something we should probably mention. The bench often looked quite weak, didn't it? So we'll see again when it comes to season previews for 2021. I think we'll all have a lot to say about Kyoto again. I think okay, ninth place saw and I'm have to rub my eyes a few times, Mito Hollyhock finishing ninth. Fantastic season for them, which I duly awarded a B grade mainly because their defensive record was so poor. 62 goals conceded, which is more than Jeff United. So if you're conceding more goals than Jeff United, you need to tighten up a little bit. Mike, you agreed with me and you went with a B for Mito. Stu had used up all his disdain on Kyoto, so he gave Mito an A. So Mike, tell us about the B for Mito.
Oh, I'm so relieved that we've actually got different grades here, because if we'd all given them a B, I was going to say we need to contrive a reason to talk about Mito.
Yes.
I mean, you've just focused on the goals against column there, John. But as a comparatively neutral supporter, my attention is on the figure immediately to the left. Mm-hmm. That is 68, which, if you look up and down that column, that's the best attacking record in the division. Better than Tokushima. Yeah. They've got the best attack in the division. And it feels like whenever you watch Mito, you're in for a good time. We're going to come on and talk about Kazuma Yamaguchi, I strongly suspect. But let's not gloss over Pitbull. 8 goals in 10 starts. He only started a game 10 times. And I really like... when I started out watching Mito at the beginning of the season, I really liked watching Yamaguchi and Nakayama together.
Yes.
Nakayama, I think he's great. He's a big lad. He's not the most sort of subtle of players.
Well, he's an old-fashioned centre forward, isn't he? Like Yuki Kakita.
Quite pretty similar to Kakita. Yeah, and I think that watching those two together. Nakayama with Yamaguchi, that's an absolute treat. There have been some comedy defensive mishaps, but overall I've just really enjoyed watching Mito, and I've really enjoyed in particular watching Yamaguchi. But I'll cede the floor to Stuart, because I'm guessing that he and I can probably make similar points about Yamaguchi.
Let's hand it over to the only person who enjoyed watching Mito more than you, Mike, which is Stu. So go for it, Stu.
Well, seeing as this floor has already been set, I think that for Mito, if someone had said to you before the season, look, I think Mito Hollyhock will be the top goal scorers in the division, you would have laughed at them. You would have told them that's plainly ridiculous. go and sit down, do whatever you need to do and get that out of your system. I think, and especially given that they lost what in hindsight was a promotion caliber manager in Shigetoshi Hasebe, who was Mito's manager last year, but has now led Avispa Fukuoka to J1. So not only did they lose Hasebe last year, but they also lost a lot of players and a lot of good players. But they had the foresight to bring in Tadahiko Akiba, who was a bit of an unknown when they did bring him in. But if you look down his resume, he's done a lot of work with the JFA in their youth categories. So I think he's, I don't have his resume in front of me, believe it or not, but I think I seem to remember he's worked with the under 20s, under 18s, under 19s, etc., etc. And he's got a lot of good experience with young players, and he brought a lot of good young players to Mito on loan. Now, I think we're going to talk a little bit about Kita Kyushu if we haven't spoken about them already. It's a double-edged sword bringing young players in on loan. If they do too well, then they don't come back, which is, you know, we've already seen Kota Yamada leave to go to Monterrey Yamagata. Kazumi Yamaguchi, I mean, for me, he was the aside from Kenny Wao at Tokushima, I think Yamaguchi was the best player in the league this year. He was involved in almost everything good that Mito did. He scored goals, he created goals, he created space. He was sensational this year, and he was given the platform to do that from a coach who understood that young players needed to be blooded, and who understood that, you know, it's important to go out and score goals. I mean, you can contrast them. We have contrasted them with Tochigi, who set up with an ultra-defensive system that kept a lot of clean sheets and that relied on kind of a little bit of luck and a little bit of kind of individual creativity going forward. But Mito were an attacking juggernaut, and they were great to watch. And I had no expectation of that from at the start of the year. And to see them blossom, like Mike said, like Pitbull as well. I mean, just the name itself is just phenomenal when you see it on the team sheet. But you've got Masato Nakayama, you've got Yamaguchi. There's all sorts of attacking talent that Mito have brought through this year, and I didn't expect that, and I had no reason to expect it. And I think that's why they outperformed my expectations, and that's why I went A for them.
Well, yeah, I think just to piggyback on the expectations point, I mean, I can't remember exactly what we said about Mito in the season preview pod, because that seems like it was about 100 years ago. But I looked at the squad in the player's guide in the Meikan, and I didn't know much about the manager, as I don't think many people did. And my initial impression was this team is going to be in trouble. Mm. This team is going to be bottom six, you know, if they do really badly, bottom two. So to see them... as top scorers in ninth and having entertained us pretty much from start to finish, whether it was scoring goals or letting them in. You have to take your hat off, really. And they've done it with next to no money, you know, next to no resources as well. It's pretty impressive feat. And I'll just be scribbling out the B and changing it to an A after we finish recording. Another team which I thought might be in a lot of trouble and then has made me look very silly is Tochigi, who finished 10th. I decided that just considering not only the improvement in results and points gained, but just the way that you mentioned they were defensive, Stu, but compared to the season before, it was like watching sort of Brazil 1970, wasn't it, with Tochigi at times. So I decided they were worth an A grade. Mike was on board with that as well and went for A, as did Stu. So we talked a lot about Tochigi in other pods, and I think we will talk about them when it comes to 2021 previews again. So we'll move on from them now. But fantastic season for them, and they went from being the team that I kind of didn't want to watch and talk about to along with Mito being one of the teams I look forward to seeing and I look forward to discussing and analysing. So let's talk about 11th place, where we had a bit more deviation when we talk about Albirex Niigata. I went for a B. for their season, because I wasn't really sure whether they'd make a push for the playoffs, and in the end they didn't. So I didn't really know what to do with them. I went for B. Stu, you were a bit less impressed and went with a C. Mike, disdain returned, possibly orange disdain spilling over from NAC 5 into Niigata Turchi. You went with D. So, Mike, tell us about the D for Niigata.
Well, yeah. So they're another one of these. LBX Niigata, they're a big club. When I first started following the J League, they were getting 30,000, 35,000 for their home games. And so to me, so to see them finishing 11th in J2 is constitutes absurd underachievement. I think that they had that experience in the middle of the season where they sacked those two foreign players, and they handled that situation particularly poorly in the way that they communicated with the J League. Clearly, a lot of sort of like internal disciplinary matters, which were associated with that. It seems to me that the only bright sparks of the season have been Homma and Chong Tese. And you know, they must be relieved that the signing of Chong Tese worked out as successfully as it did. But you know, he seems like a the player, a sort of player who can corral a forward line, if not an entire sort of dressing room or squad. He was the kind of guy that they really, really needed. But yeah, I just think that for Niigata, a team as potentially as big as Niigata to finish, 11th, absolutely kind of mid-table, I can't. That's just not good enough. It's just not good enough.
I think that's all fair comment. The stuff about Fabio and Pedro Manzi being sacked for the drink driving, and the fact that Niigata had known about that and not notified the league, yeah, that was pretty awful. I think after that, everybody was probably looking forward to the end of the season rather than enjoying the final few months. I think as well on the Chong Tese point, he has been absolutely fantastic for Niigata, we should say. Ferocious competitor. And I think I was saying I wasn't sure how fit he was, how many games he'd play. Turns out he was basically the fittest player on the squad and played all the games. And I don't know, is he 38? He's 37? 38? But he was probably, he's probably up with Honma as a player of the season contender. So that probably says a lot about the state of the squad, before he came in on loan. Stu, C for Niigata, what do you think? Have you heard anything to change your mind?
Yeah, the more Mike talks, the more I'm inclined to agree with him. I think
you're right, man.
Yeah, it's all right, it's being recorded. It's all for posterity. I think maybe the thing that sways me a little bit is that I think their season was derailed by the two players getting done for drink driving, and their reaction was poor. But I think that had they in a different world where they just call a taxi or they walk wherever they needed to go, I think Fabio especially looked a really good player. Pedro Manzi was kind of peripheral for a lot of the year, but Fabio looked like a really decent player. And I think had things turned out differently, or that night had gone a little bit quieter, or whatever happened, I think they might have gone on to have a better season than they did. I think I saw enough spark, and maybe it was just kind of being infatuated with Shion Homma, because the kid's got everything, and I doubt he'll be at Niigata come the end of this off season. In fact, I'm almost certain of it that he won't be there.
Urawa probably sending out the press release just as we record.
Definitely, and I think that once they lose him, then they're going to have a little bit of difficulty kind of figuring out where to go from there. I'm surprised they haven't signed Chong Tae-se permanently. He did seem like the ideal fit there, even if he is getting on in years. They do have a couple of good goalkeepers, albeit one of them's on loan, Ryosuke Kojima. And I think Michael James re-upped his contract as well. Yeah, probably this season, I could have given them a C- or even a D, but I think they were derailed a little bit by circumstances that were mainly outside of the club's control. It was just the pathetic actions of two individuals that had a really big effect on their season. So possibly I've been a little bit generous with Niigata in the afterlight of what happened.
I'll say as well, just finally on Niigata, in my defence, they lost all of the last four games, didn't they? They were on the beach a little bit early, and it's so tight, so compacted in that sort of area of the table. If they just picked up one win, from that run of games, they would have ended up finishing eighth. So I don't know whether that would have made any difference to anybody's ranking, but it was something that I had in mind of like, well, they did come up way short, and mid-table was probably right for them, but they could have ended up seventh or sixth even, just if they hadn't knocked off quite so early in the last month or so of the season. Okay, gentlemen, I think that brings us to the midway point of the table, doesn't it? 11th place. Is my maths on? Is that right, Stu?
That's not bad. It's not bad. Right. It's ballpark. I like it.
What we'll do at this juncture is take a quick comfort break for some refreshments, and then we'll be back in a moment, and we'll look at the bottom half of the table. And I think Mike, you're going to have a lot to say about another orange clad outfit, aren't you? So let's take a short break, and we'll be back again in a minute.